Homestyle Green, episode 236, Environmental, Social and Governance Sustainability, with global sustainability expert Cheryl Owen. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Cheryl Owen is definitely an inspiring person. She is the Senior Sustainability Manager at HLW, which is a consultancy based in New York. But she also does an incredible amount of volunteer work in everything from the National Society of Black Engineers through to the US Green Building Council and also the International Living Future Institute, where she's an ambassador and co-facilitator. They're the people who look after the Living Building Challenge, which is one of the most strenuous and really far-reaching sustainability frameworks in the design industry. I had a chat with Cheryl recently about her role, and we dive into the business end of sustainability consulting and really holding clients accountable to their sustainability goals. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do enjoy this and you find the show useful, I'd love it if you could support the show. You can head over to the homepage and click on that Patreon button there and make a contribution. And also, if you've got a story or if you know someone with a great story, then get in touch. You can email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to hear from you. Now, here's my chat with Cheryl Owen. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Cheryl. It's great to have you on. Now, you're based in New York. Is that home for you? Have you grown up in New York?
Yes, I have. New York, Brooklyn, to be more exact, is, you know, born and raised here. And worked in D.C. for a while and then went to London for a little bit and made my way back to New York. So,
yeah.
You come back home, I guess.
And you're an engineer by training. When did you first get into sustainability?
You know, even from the beginning of doing engineering, I've always had a sustainability twist to everything I did. And then that's where I was like, you know what, maybe I should do this as like a full-time job. And I think for the first couple of years that I've been doing sustainability, I was still trying to figure out, do I want to work from a construction standpoint, do you want to work for an architecture firm? Like, there are so many ways you can split sustainability. And I was lucky enough to be able to, you know, test out the whole AEC industry from a sustainability standpoint.
Where did that initial interest sustainability, you said it's kind of always been there. Do you attribute that to anyone particular or any experience when you were growing up?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily say just one thing, but I've always thought of like the environment and trying to essentially create a cohesive ecosystem. But if I wanted to find a pinpoint, I would guess one of my earliest memories around that, I would probably say classes around environmental science. It was so funny because recently a high school friend of mine actually reached out and she's like, it's great to see that you are essentially making a career of the environmental science class that we took so many years
ago. Yeah. I mean, would you consider yourself as a sustainability professional? I mean, you are, it's in your title, Senior Sustainability Analyst. And I imagine that's a lot of people would aspire to having a role that's got sustainability in it. Is that a thing now? Can people do that as a career?
Yeah, people can do that and they can switch. I think I'm a living example of it. It really stems from your passion and your ability to communicate essentially what it is that you want and how you can support the efforts of the client or that specific business. And then that provides you with a great opportunity to essentially interject yourself in a way that probably most individuals are not really looking at it.
On a day-to-day basis, what does your job mostly entail? Well, maybe not day-to-day, but on a project basis, where do you have an impact? What is it that you actually do as an engineer and with all your experience as an analyst?
Yeah, so a lot of my role supports projects with green building rating system so certification goals. So that may be LEED or WELL or FIT WELL. And I recently received my certified passive house consultant certificate. So, you know, that in of itself was, and if anyone's taken a test, it's a very rigorous test, but was able to come out successful at the end. And hopefully, you know, my next step is to start integrating more technical analysis around thermal bridging within buildings. Like, that is an important conversation that needs to be had, especially as like code is becoming more stringent and regulations are becoming more stringent around your envelope and the amount of energy that you lose through it. And in addition to that, like, I've also had experience in like daylight modeling and glare analysis and energy modeling. So it's really about how do you merge, I guess, like the technical side of it and being able to communicate that with designers, right? Designers ultimately only care about, tell me what I need to do. Like, I don't want to know the nitty gritty details. Just tell me what I need to do in order for it to work out in a more sustainable way. And that's essentially where we come in as sustainability professionals or analysts to help bridge that gap.
What's the demand right now for some of those other rating tools that you mentioned? You've got WELL, you've got LEED, FitWELL. Are they things that clients come knowing about and ask you as a consultancy, as a practice to incorporate, or is there a mandate, or do you try and talk clients into any of those?
It's a mixture of both. You know, some clients, you know, they're already knowledgeable about some of the sustainability and health and wellness. They already have in mind what it is that they're looking for. And it's either they're on par with what they're asked or they're not. And it's up to us to kind of educate them as well. So ultimately, clients are getting this from their drivers, right? They're getting cues from their stakeholders, their investors, about what it is that they would like to see within their portfolios. Just, and based on that, they will ask specific questions and say, well, I want to do LEED or I want to do WELL. And then that becomes a demand, mainly because of the customers, their customers are asking for it. And then sometimes you do have to say, okay, let's pump the brakes. You have an internal goal that says that you want to be carbon neutral. Is your ask in alignment with that? Right. And then that's where we come in and we say, maybe we suggest an alternative, maybe like a living building challenge or a living carbon certification. You know, there are other certifications that may be in better alignment with their goals. And that's where we can step in and educate them.
Right. So because you've got that palette of different skill sets and exposure to so many different rating tools in your experience, you're able to best match up what might be appropriate and what's going to align best with their intended outcomes.
Exactly, exactly. That is our goal.
Tell us about Living Building Challenge. Have you done any projects that have gone through the full certification?
I have not. No, I have not been one of those lucky individuals to work for a client that would be interested in taking it on. But Living Building Challenge essentially encompasses how do you design a building that is a regenerative or a closed loop system, right? Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're designing in a way that we're not taking more than we need and that we give back to the surrounding ecosystems that we're going into. But it also focuses also on the impact that you may have on the community and also equity. So it's really about, I think, asking questions and going back to that point of innocence about why we're doing sustainability around that triple bottom line and making sure that the people as well as the planet is incorporated within it.
Does that issue of equity come into your work, and is it an important aspect of sustainability? Do you think there's been a lot of talk about, equity is just such a huge topic across gender, across race, across different ethnicities, even within communities. Is that part of sustainability?
Yeah, for sure it is. Going back to our clients, one of the biggest things that you can really say is most of our clients have ESG, environmental, social, and governance goals. And unfortunately, they focus a lot on the environmental side and tend to forget that, hey, you also have to address the social side and essentially the policies that you're putting in place that really assess the effectiveness of essentially what you're trying to achieve. So when we talk about the social side of it, that's where clients can really assess, okay, is my real estate development supporting the local economy? Is it essentially causing greenlining? Essentially where we're saying who belongs within this specific area, who does not, and how can we essentially combat that? Like we make decisions and we focus only on the impact it has within our four walls that we're building. And we don't really look beyond that to see how it impacts the community that we're going into and the supply chain.
Is it reasonable to expect all designers, whether they be architects or engineers, to think about some of these issues? Or because I know a lot of engineers just like to stay in their lane and look at focus on their spreadsheets and do the analysis. Do those people also need to be thinking wider than that and thinking about the people and the environment? Or is that a bit too much to ask?
It's not too much to ask. And, you know, if they don't feel like it's their area of expertise, then they can always ask the question and do the research in order for us to start telling a more holistic story about how we are impacting, you know, the community, right? We can't say that we have ESG goals or we have these aspirational goals around, you know, corporate sustainability reporting, but then we only want to address one third of the equation rather than looking at the full spectrum of it. So it's important that we do a better job of not just looking at our effort, but also looking at how effective we are at achieving them.
Mm. How much influence do you have in guiding a project if it's already come with an idea of the objectives and the client's got some ideas of where they want to go, or even they're constrained by policies or funding? As an engineer, as a consultant, do you have any wider influence over the uptake of sustainability, or do you see it as just something that you're responding to the client's wishes?
Yeah, unfortunately, the industry is still in this. Let's just respond to the RFP. This is what we budgeted for. And we do need to do a better job of, at the beginning of the project, really looking at a client's internal goals. Because it's posted on their website. You can do a quick research about what is it that they're doing about corporate sustainability. And then from there, you can say, hey, you made a commitment. To the biggest one that's out there now is net zero carbon or carbon neutral. Is your ask in alignment with that? And if it's not, then you need to tell your client, these are the things that I would suggest that you do in order for you to achieve that goal, right? Yeah. Then from there, you can start formulating a realistic budget and a realistic ask from the client. As long as that client honestly sees the impact that it will have on essentially how they're going to look to their stakeholders, right? Which is the reason why they're even having this conversation to begin with. Then they may entertain, okay, increasing the budget in order to accommodate the additional scope that may be needed to do, let's say, embodied carbon assessment or operational carbon assessment, because code is going that way. It's just, are you going to be in alignment with the regulations and essentially how do you future-proof your building? In order for you to prevent having to do this work down the road, right? It's going to be more expensive to do that later on.
Right. So it starts to become a good economical decision, not just a PR exercise or something to feel good.
Yeah, we need to move away from the feel good and really, I like to say, let's remove the out of sight, out of mind mentality. And really see how our decisions are impacting the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Are you part of a wider sustainability team at HLW, or is sustainability sort of embedded in what everyone does?
There is a separate team, people who are a little bit more specialized in sustainability. We do try and be and be integrated within the design team, mainly on like base buildings. And so like what should designers think about in the beginning of a project in order for it to truly be sustainable or high performing? And you know, I'm currently working on a project where we're trying to essentially propose like a high performance. Let's look at how we can probably look at CLT instead of concrete and metal. Let's see what the trade-offs can be. And it's also about making sure you get the contractor on board ahead of time as well. And that's important so they can start pricing and helping with VE options at the beginning. And so that you're finding solutions that are budget friendly, but also helps you achieve the sustainability goals.
So there's a couple of things in there. Firstly, potentially disrupting the, if there is a normal workflow in air quotes of what a design firm might do if they're used to a particular method of construction, say if it was steel beams or something like, and you're suggesting, hey, why don't we think about something else? That's going to disrupt a few civil engineers, I imagine, structural engineers, because they're going to have to do something differently. In the same way that I'm imagining that if you come up with a design that requires much less heating and cooling and air conditioning, is that going to decrease the amount of work that a mechanical services engineer is going to have to do? Or is there a conflict at all there?
There definitely is conflict because people see it as like, hey, you're encroaching on my scope.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's like, as we're designing more complex buildings, then that gives you an opportunity to show your expertise. And for you to definitely show that you can do more complex projects, right?
Is this what you say to those other engineers to say, hey, this is an opportunity for you?
It depends on the engineer, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
Because some of them like to stay in their lane and they design to code. That's what they that's what they do, and they're getting paid for. But if you see it as an opportunity to essentially look at your entire portfolio and what that opportunity looks like for your specific firm down the road, some of them are a lot more receptive to it, and they're willing to give you essentially some feedback as to what other mechanical systems they can do
to be
more high performing.
The other thing you mentioned was about getting the contractor on board. Now, that potentially disrupts the model of pre-design concept and then going out to tender, because you're sort of aligning with someone at a fairly early stage. Do you have to convince the client that's a good idea?
More and more clients are doing that to begin with, where they're getting the GC to kind of price it and to take a look at the design ahead of time, because they see value in it, rather than down the road, this is what we designed, it's over budget, now you have to redesign. So more clients are actually getting like their own separate independent GC to do an assessment of the design before 100% DD. And if there's a redesign to happen, then at least there's time in the budget to allocate for that.
You're an incredibly busy person, not just your day job, but you do a lot of volunteer work as well. National Society of Black Engineers, US Green Building Council, lots of other social aspects as well. How do you fit it all in?
You know, you got to divvy up your time accordingly, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely not easy. I'm just coming. Last week, I did a presentation for Cornet, focusing on essentially the social impact assessment of ESG reporting. And that was an interesting conversation as to essentially calling out where we are currently in what social impact reporting looks like and means for the ESG real estate community and what we can do better. And it was interesting because we had on a panel someone from Canada who did One Planet Living as part of the conversation. And she kind of spoke about how they had meetings with the community. They integrated them. They still do. And they make sure they embed the culture of the essentially the individuals who were there before they developed it. So it's always interesting to hear their another perspective as to how it is successful and it is doable and it is profitable. It may require you to think through some strategies or some nuances that you probably never, you know, encroached on before. But this is there are living examples of it being, you know, doable and profitable. Yesterday I had an event for IIDA on embodied carbon, and essentially this very subject of, you know, why is it important, why we should be looking at embodied carbon and not just operational carbon, and what does that process look like? Because it's still relatively early in the research, early in the integration for designers, and you know, the industry is still trying to figure that out in a way that is, I guess, streamlined and helpful. Mm-hmm.
Is operational carbon not way more important than embodied carbon?
I wouldn't say one is more important or the other, but embodied carbon definitely has a bigger impact on one's carbon footprint than operational. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we've been focusing a lot on energy, operational carbon, and mainly that's just because of, you know, new regulations or code, and that's what they're focusing on. So, of course, the industry responds by saying, hey, we need to build up expertise on operational carbon. We need to learn how to decarbonize the grid, yada, yada. Around operational carbon, but embodied carbon is important for us to assess as well.
So does that mean that designers have been just using or not really caring, not really worrying too much about how much concrete or steel or whatever goes into a building, and justifying that by saying, oh, it's going to be a really efficient building when it's done, so it doesn't really matter what we put into it at the beginning?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's pretty much been the direction that we've been, you know, going in.
Right.
We've just been doing less bad without understanding the full picture of our decisions. So when we say that we're going to just integrate concrete, we also need to say, okay, what are some alternatives in order for us to reduce our carbon emissions? But what's also important is making sure that we understand, like, when we get the results, how do we essentially translate that information into something that's meaningful, right? Mm-hmm. What should be my threshold for carbon emissions for this project? Big question, don't know the answer, but there are tools out there to help you figure that out, like Science-Based Target Initiative, which are helping clients set goals around their Scope 1, Scope 2, and Scope 3 emissions, and maybe that's a place to start. But it's definitely an interesting topic to be involved with right now.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing more people start to take that up themselves ahead of any regulations that come in saying we want to be ahead of the curve here, and because it is a long-term strategy that people need to plan for.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a great opportunity, right, for people to look at how they can grow their business, right? You know, if you invest ahead of time and grow that expertise, you can start offering that to clients.
I've got to let you go, but speaking just finally of growing expertise, how do you see the future? And I mean, not just in design, but also obviously you're doing work with trying to get younger people into STEM and the basics, maybe inspiring them towards things like engineering. What do you see? Are you positive about the future of your type of work?
I see that there is, you know, great opportunity to make sure that we look at, I think, how people are being impacted by our decisions. Like, that is really the reasons why we're talking about sustainability. It's also about the environment and making sure that when we address emissions or the impact of the ecosystems, that we understand the holistic picture.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's are we going in the right direction, and are we going there fast enough?
We're not going there fast enough, no. We're slowly going there, and a lot of it hinges on, of course, regulations, policy, a lot of things that tend to be outside of our, I guess, our ability to impact change on a much quicker basis. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're making sure that you're bringing this front and center to your clients, at least you're getting it in front of one additional person, right? It's one step at a time. It's never easy to do it. To do it all at once. It's not going to, that in of itself is not doable.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, it's a pleasure talking to you, Cheryl. There's a lot more that we could dive into. You do some incredible work, not just in your job there, but also all that volunteer work and the stuff that you're involved in. So all I can say, I guess, is keep up that great work, and I'm sure that you will inspire people and keep encouraging people in the right direction, hopefully encourage the whole industry to move faster as well.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity. It's great to speak with you, Matthew. And looking forward to connecting and staying connected and collaborating.
Yeah, I hope you get a couple of passive house projects to work on, or maybe that Living Building Challenge project in Central New York at some stage.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, Cheryl.
All right, bye. Thanks, Matt.
Cheryl Owen is a senior sustainability manager at HLW in New York. She also volunteers as a tutor for the National Society of Black Engineers. She's a member of the United States Green Building Council. She is a volunteer for Dollar Day Volunteers and an advance ambassador for the USGBC National Capital Region chapter. And it goes on. She helps out with, she's an ACE mentor, and she's also an ambassador and co-facilitator for International Living Future Institute, which is the organization that runs Living Building Challenge. That's quite a lot. Quite an inspiring woman. And we need more people like Cheryl out there, because she does all these great things, but she's also right in the reality of engineering, design, consultancy. I really like the fact that she holds clients accountable. It's all well and good for clients and stakeholders to write these lofty goals and mission statements about their sustainability goals. That's where Cheryl finds her ammunition. She looks on their websites and says, hey, this is what you're saying you're about. And if she finds it, as it sounds, she finds that they're not living than walking that talk, then she'll hold them accountable. We definitely need more people like that in the industry. So it's fantastic to hear stories like that and know of people that are doing great work. I also really liked Cheryl's comment about the fact that codes are changing. They're getting more stringent. They're thinking about carbon and energy efficiency. So it actually makes economic sense, even if you're not sort of at the far end of the green spectrum, it makes economic sense to go in that direction, because the option of not doing it just doesn't make sense, because you're going to end up with an asset which is redundant pretty quickly if codes are going to move beyond the current level that you're building at. That's it for me for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'd love to get your feedback and thoughts. And also, if you do like this show and you find it useful, I'd love to get your rating and review, or flick us a little donation to keep the show up and running and free to everyone. You can click on the Patreon button on the homepage if you do want to support the show. All sponsorship, whatever level, is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live. Hey, if you enjoy Homestyle Green, then I know you're going to love the Passive House podcast. I co-host the show with Zach Semke from the Passive House Accelerator. Check it out now at passivehouseaccelerator.com/podcast.